Welcome in to another edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, he is Dan, and we are coming at you the night before the start of the NCAA college basketball season. Dan, we were talking about it earlier today on the Skinny podcast. That Friday has really kind of become like opening day for college basketball. It's kind of become a fun tradition to wait till that first day gets here, and then a bunch of games are right on that Friday, even though pretty much all of the games suck.
Yeah, and it's kind of, I actually don't mind the Friday game too, to start off the season. I know some people don't like it, but to me it's kind of fun to have that be the first, just kind of roll out to happy hour and then go check out the first game of the season. It's kind of a nice tradition that they built. Hey, we should probably mention also that Accept No Substitutes, we are the original Xavier podcast. I understand there may be some other Xavier podcasts going around. Like, no one had thought of the idea of two white dudes just talking a bunch of crap for like an hour before we started it. So I think we need to address the imitators and the haters that are out there.
Well, that's a fact, first of all. This kind of feels like a sweeps episode. You know, now that I'm in the TV business, I understand sweeps and everything when the new book opens. This feels like a sweeps episode because we've got to impress the audience now. There's competition. So if we get off the rails, maybe we're trying a little too hard. I won't lie to you guys.
That's probably true. Usually we would also like bring in a new character, but Snow is too busy to be on the podcast, so we can't even introduce Snow. Maybe we could have like an adorable baby or something like that, or a puppy to really capture the viewer.
My favorite reason that Snow is not on the podcast is because he's closer to me than he typically is. Like, normally he's in Indy and we can do this no problem. Right now he's in Cincinnati, and so we weren't able to get him on the podcast.
That doesn't make any sense. Does his phone not work in Cincinnati?
Look, I'm not making the rules. I'm just telling you how Snow's life works, and that's all right. How it is. So let's get
moving
into
along.
Basketball talk.
Moving along.
Right. Dan, you were at the exhibition, right? The Thomas More game?
I was.
Let's start with the only real takeaway that I think anyone could have come away with from that game, which is how the arena looked. What are you, I've talked about it enough at this point. What are your thoughts on the changes to the arena?
So I think there's a couple things. I think the two things that are the most immediately obvious are and I know you talked about this on the Skinny podcast, and you talked about this on Mo Agger's show and probably Lance's show and every other program that we'll have you on. But I think that the paint job in the arena, to paint all the sort of exposed slab concrete blue, it really changes the feel inside. And I can't even explain why. I can't tell you that it makes it feel smaller or bigger, but it really changes the feel of the arena in a very subtle way. I also think, and you've touched on this, that the lighting on the court really modifies the way that it feels being at a game there. The way CentOS was always lit in the past, it was just extremely bright everywhere in the arena, which, you know, is okay, but it didn't feel the same way as going to a game at the old Cincinnati Gardens or at MSG or at any NBA arena, really. They had sort of those, I'm not a electrician, but I know they had that, they had a lighting system that was very like persnickety. They couldn't really turn them off for a period of time. So it does feel like more of a big time event. Then you couple that with some of the seating changes, and it changes the feel of being inside the arena. It really is a different feel with the lookout on the one end, and then with the Joseph Club too, with the way they built that out on the other end. It changes really the feel of the arena. Also, it feels like there are more people closer to the court. So there's a lot of different things. It is the most significant change in CentOS Center since it was built, and it's significant for those that weren't at the Thomas More game or who didn't come to Madness or who didn't even, I don't think they had done much of this during the Select-A-Seat. When you get in there, you're going to be surprised because it's not going to feel like the CentOS Center experience that you had even, you know, last March.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about it is after seeing what the paint job did to the inside of the CentOS Center, it's really given me more of appreciation for how much Paul Brown Stadium sucks. Like, honestly, it made me realize how much I hate all that gray slab concrete that is 100% Paul Brown Stadium and how bad that looks now that it's been covered up at CentOS Center. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, Cintas was never as sterile and as sort of characterless as PBS was. But you know, I mean, they, and I think Xavier always did a pretty good job of trying to customize that arena and make it sort of a home. But this takes it to a completely different level. Now, I have heard, we have heard that there are some problems with the new lookout seats. We had some informants tell us that that from some of those lookout seats, which are pretty high roller seats, that it's tough to see the entire court, which doesn't surprise me because when you're there and you look at it, even, you know, my seats are on the side now in the bottom part of the upper deck, and you can tell that it's pretty tight to the court. And so I guess I would expect that Xavier will fix that pretty quickly. I know they've been pretty receptive to fan concerns in the past. I'll give you a quick story. When we got our initial tickets at Cintas Center, we were behind the basket kind of on an aisle. And they, at that time, at the bottom of the walkways, they had like a chicken wire fence that to keep people from falling off at the bottom of the steps. And it really was obtrusive and it obscured your ability to see. And my dad called in and complained about it. And like within a month, they had replaced those with plexiglass, which they still have there, and alleviated that issue. So I think that, you know, they're going to be responsive to those sort of unforeseen issues. Although I wonder how they missed that one. But yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, and I have not seen any of the sort of premium areas down by the media room, that new lounge down there. But it looks to me like they did a first class job of upgrading the arena.
Without question, I think it looks great. So in terms of the actual game, I think fans who were seeing the team for the first time, they came, they saw, and they left really impressed with Najee Marshall. I have to assume that was your biggest takeaway from the game. What did you think of Najee Marshall's play?
I mean, he is a lot more he's a lot more athletic than I thought he was. I'll be honest with you. I thought when we talked about Najee and I saw some of the video that was out there of him, I viewed him more as this is a guy that's going to be primarily a below the rim player. He's maybe not going to be overly quick, but he's going to be smart. He's going to be a good passer. He's going to have good court awareness. This dude can get up and down the court. I mean, that hammer dunk he put down toward the end of the first half was an impressive athletic play. It kind of reminded of Jalen Reynolds stumbling and bumbling against Wisconsin a few years ago in the tournament. But yeah, I was pretty impressed with Najee. His shot looks a lot better than I expected it to be. He had a couple free throws, showed good form from the line. He's an impressive looking dude. But it's tough to say, Rick, but I was really impressed with Xavier's intensity against Thomas Moore, both on defense and rebounding. But it's a little hard to tell when you're playing against a team that's as undersized and just as physically overmatched as they were against Xavier. Although I was talking to a guy who's a Kentucky fan who watched their scrimmage against Thomas Moore and the Xavier game, and said that he was pretty impressed, that he thought Xavier, the way that they bullied Thomas Moore was similar to what Kentucky did, which can't be a bad thing. But yeah, I mean, there were definitely some real positives out of that. Najee's play was big. And you know, Najee's numbers could have been a lot better. He missed a lot of bunnies around the goal. Missed a couple chances for and ones, but he hit a three. He ran the floor really well. He fit into the defensive scheme really well. It was an impressive debut for him.
Yeah, what was he, 6-for-10 or 6-for-11 from the field? And he made all the tough shots. Like, had he finished the easy ones around the rim, he shoots like 100% and has 25 points.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ask for too much more than what he put out there. Paul Scruggs, I thought, you know, he's as advertised. You know, he's just a big, strong dude. He's not popping off the, you know, he doesn't make your eyes pop. He's not doing anything hugely spectacular, but he makes little plays. I know there was one play in the first half that really, I think, exemplified what we hope to get from Paul Scruggs, which he caught the ball real high on the left point and just blew up a double team, just got through a double team in one step, went like 8 feet in one dribble and was gone and got to the basket and finished. And that's the kind of stuff that you want to see from him, right? I mean, he got lost a couple times defensively, but Scruggs and Marshall were both as advertised. Elias Harden was better than I expected him to be, and I gather that he played really well against Ohio State in the alleged scrimmage as well. So, you know, maybe we underplayed a little bit Elias's opportunities to get minutes straight from jump, because if he can go out there and hit some threes for Xavier, that may be something they need off the bench.
Elias is a funny case right now, man. Like, I don't know that I've seen anyone come in and have a two first weeks of practice that were worse than his. Honest to God, I mean, Kamal Richards, Chris Cantinos, those guys thought that the game was moving way too fast for Elias when practice started. And he's certainly made some strides since then. But nothing he had done suggested that he would come into Musketeer Madness and look confident and bury that three. Nothing would suggest that he'd come into the Ohio State scrimmage and play really well and play confident offensively and then carry that into the Thomas More game. And again, the competition they're playing outside of the Ohio State game, you can't really tell anything, but it's actually more about the confidence with him than it is the competition or exactly what he's been doing in these, you know, live action appearances. So I think you'd have to be at least pleasantly surprised as a Xavier fan with what you've seen from Elias Harden so far.
Yeah, no doubt. But I mean, moving to I guess the weirdest thing about watching that, and probably same thing from the Ohio State scrimmage, is essentially Xavier's played 80 more or less competitive minutes of basketball using a lineup, obviously without Trayvon, that they're probably only going to use, what, 6-7 minutes a game at the worst in the games that matter this year. So there's a certain limit to what you can really take away from it. But a lot of the things that you've been reporting over the offseason from workouts and so forth are definitely true. Obviously, JP is in terrific shape. Tyreek Jones is in terrific shape. Kaiser looks bigger and looks a little bit more assured with the ball. So a lot of those things are definitely true. And I think it was kind of as advertised, given that Trayvon didn't play. So we kind of saw what Xavier would have looked like if he left for the pros, I guess. And so we'll get a better picture of what Xavier's going to look like tomorrow night when they play Morehead State in actual live action.
Yeah, and Chris Mack did say today at the pregame press conference that Trayvon is going to play. I asked him about the team's health in general, all the guys that have been nicked up, JP, Tyreek, Quentin, and Trayvon. And he said, you know, are we 100%? No, no one is at this point. That's just the way college sports work. He's, you know, some guys might be 87%, some guys might be 95%, whatever. He went on some coach speak there, but basically his overall point was that he doesn't expect anyone to be limited due to injuries. So it sounds like they are finally getting healthy for the first time pretty much this preseason, and it comes at the right time for them. This Morehead State game, it's impossible to know what to expect out of this Morehead State team other than I don't think they're going to be very good at all. They lost their top three players from last year. Their fourth returning scorer is a sophomore that came off the bench last year in Lamontre Harris, who I liked when he was playing in high school. He's a nice player, but he's an undersized forward, basically, that has some skill and some scoring ability. And then other than that, they have another shooter that came off the bench last year, and over half his shots came from three-point range, and Jordan Walker, he'll start this year. And then they've got just a ton of new guys, like literally 10 new guys, some freshmen that they're expecting to play, some JUCO guys that they're expecting to play and fill big roles. It's pretty difficult to know what to expect out of this team, but they did almost lose to Cincinnati Christian, which is maybe at the level of like a good high school team in their last exhibition after actually looking okay against Kentucky in their first exhibition. They were down and had to come back to beat Cincinnati Christian. So I would be shocked if this game is close on Friday.
Well, with that being said, we've seen a couple of these quote unquote layups at the beginning of the season for pretty good Xavier teams turn into pretty rip roaring games. I mean, Lehigh last year, who was a much better team than Morehead State, Western Michigan 4 or 5 years ago, took Xavier to the limit on the opening day of the season. I think X has won like 27 straight opening games. Certainly you look at this and then the Rider game on Monday and you think a couple of layups, a couple of speed bumps for this team to get up to speed. And probably that's the best way this could have worked out, given Trayvon having this injury scare when he did, is to have a couple games early in the season where he can kind of get into the flow. You certainly would prefer to do it this way than to have him come back and his first game be at Wisconsin in a hostile environment against a good team. So you know, I think there's going to be some good opportunities in these next two games for Xavier to work out a few of the lingering questions that they have in the early season before they take on Wisconsin.
That being said, what is your biggest question about this team? Like, if I said, what's going to hold this team back from hitting the expectations that have been set for them in the preseason, what would be your biggest concern?
If I'm honest, the thing that concerns me the most is chemistry. The thing that concerns me the most is kind of what we saw in the first half of last season, where they needed more than one ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I think that you have three guys in Gooden, Blewett, and McCura, all of whom have made an impact already in their college careers, and all of whom feel like they can be the man. I think it's fair to say. And so how do they play together is a question. You know, last year, obviously in the first 3-4 months of the season, they never really could get it together. And the team only really gelled in the postseason when roles were defined a little bit better, when Edmund wasn't available, when Quentin had to be very restrained because he had no backup, essentially. But the year before, they had a similar level of talent up and down the roster, a lot of guys that wanted shots, that wanted the ball, and they annihilated everybody in the non-conference schedule and were very successful in the Big East, too. So you just had – and you won't know really until 5 or 6 games in whether they have that right mix or they don't. And that's going to be the biggest question for me.
Yeah, and I think it's equal parts responsibility on the three guys that you named. A big part of it is going to be Quentin Gooden and how does he fit in? Because at the end of last year, he's got an injury. He's playing 40 minutes. It was kind of like, don't get me wrong, he made some plays and he did a heck of a job for this team in a tough situation. But at the same time, it was kind of like, stay out of the way a little bit and let Trayvon take over this team and make a run, and to extent JP as well. This year, there's no taking a back seat for Quentin Gooden. He's looks like he's ready to be a star, and I know he doesn't have the mentality of a guy who's going to take a back seat and just say, okay, you guys run the team. He's going to be a big factor this year. So can he implement his aggressiveness and scoring into the mix along with Trayvon and JP? I don't think it's a huge concern, but you're absolutely right that the chemistry is probably the biggest question mark. And JP and Trayvon have to be good as well. Like, they're in their senior year. They're both chasing professional aspirations. There are things that could go wrong here in terms of that chemistry. I think you bring up a good point. The other one I would say is I don't have as much of a concern about it because I think Tyreek Jones is going to be really good. But until it's proven, there's still, I mean, you think back to last year, early in the season, this team wasn't great defensively, and the big man rotation people were besides themselves with after, you know, losses to like Baylor and the Colorado game, and people were not happy with the front court. I still think that's a big bit of a question mark going into the season, just because Sean O'Mara hasn't proven that he can be consistent yet. And I don't, not that the Thomas More game matters, but at the same time, it did nothing to make you feel confident that he's a changed guy and is just going to come out and be a world beater this year. So you really have no idea what to expect out of Kerem Cantor. He's fun to watch. He has an interesting game, but there's certainly some question marks there in terms of his toughness, his rebounding, his defense. And so you're really relying on Tyreek, a guy who was consistently in foul trouble, and also Chris Mack has major concerns about his conditioning at times and his ability to sustain his effort for long periods, as your go-to player in all likelihood, and he still has to prove himself. So I think it's the chemistry and it's the front court probably are the two biggest question marks that could hold this team back from reaching its potential. And obviously there's injuries, but that goes for every team in the country, and you can't really account for that. Dan, is there anything else before we get into the annual win-loss game that you wanted to bring up about this team and what you've seen, or any thoughts after the preseason practices and reports?
I think that they are I think that one of the things that's unique about this team is there is just how bad. It's not that they overwhelm you with size necessarily, but they just have so many guys who seem like they're all about the same size and all look the same, have big long arms active defensively, big and strong. I mean, they're an impressive, like Snow's referred to them as an impressive team getting off the airplane. That is definitely the case. And so I think that they should be a better defensive team this year. I do, you know, but I share your concern. I think the one potential soft spot from a defensive standpoint is inside, particularly if Tyreek's in foul trouble, because I mean, Cantor can't guard anybody. Although he, as you say, he does bring a lot to the table offensively. And then Sean, you know, what's Sean going to be this year? I don't know. You don't know. I doubt the coaching staff knows. So, you know, that's going to be a work in progress and something to monitor as the season goes along.
Yeah, the length thing is a great point. That Thomas Moore game, that was one thing that stood out, especially sitting on the court. You could feel how long Xavier's perimeter players, their wings and guards, looked and felt. And yes, it's Thomas Moore, so that feels much more exaggerated, but those guys were completely overwhelmed. At times it felt like there were, you know, 6, 7, 8 defenders out on the court for Xavier with the way they're in their gaps and kind of being in two spots at once with their length. So I think that's going to be a big factor on the defensive end. And it's rare that you add freshmen into the mix that are expected to contribute, and that strengthens your defense. But that's the case this year with Najee Marshall and Paul Scruggs, who are going to be two of these team's best defenders.
Yeah, no question about that. So I think that they have a significant upside from what they were last year, both offensively and defensively. And I think, you know, if a few things break their way, they could look a lot like the strengths of that team 2 years ago, except maybe a little bit better maybe a little bit better defensively. I don't know that their offensive ceiling is quite as high. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that this team has the potential to be a top 10 type team this season. It just depends. It's going to have to show on the court, and some of these pieces that were maybe 80% sure on or 60% sure on, you know, they're going to have to hit on those things. But yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anything so far that makes me seriously question my belief that this is the strongest team that Chris Mack ever had from a roster perspective.
All right. Well, with that being said, let's take a look at the non-conference slate as we do every year, go through this game by game and give you our prediction for Xavier's non-conference win-loss record. I think, you know, we already talked about Morehead State and Rider. Obviously, I assume you have those chalked up as two wins. So do I. Yes. I don't think there's really anything to go into with either game. So that brings us to that third game of the year, the Gavitt game, in Madison at Wisconsin, 8:30 on FS1. It's November 16th, Thursday night. Dan, what do you think about this one?
I think Xavier's going to win. I just think they're closer to a finished product than Wisconsin is. And, you know, they're not a team where this Xavier team is senior dominated. They're not going to be overawed by going on the road at Wisconsin. I think Xavier will win that game.
I think Xavier is the better team, and I think Wisconsin is, you're right, they're not a finished product. They're kind of not necessarily rebuilding, but maybe more retooling is the right word. They've got some pieces they have to figure out. I'm still chalking this one up as a loss this early in the season on the road in an environment like that with some of the emotions that some of these guys will have from the past, from 2 years ago, I think. Maybe they're a little out of sorts, or maybe they absolutely just dominate and kick ass. We've seen that from a guy like JP McCura before in these types of situations, but I am going to give Xavier the loss at Wisconsin, which brings us to the game against Hampton that next Monday at Xavier. I would assume this is a win for you as well.
They could start Snow at point guard and win that game.
All right, 4-0 for you. I've got them 3-1 moving into the Continental Tire Las Vegas Invitational. They start that on Thanksgiving Day, 5 p.m. against George Washington, an old Atlantic 10 opponent. Dan, what do you think about the Colonials?
They'll beat GW.
Absolutely. Which brings us to a game against Kansas State, Arizona State, likely. Both of those teams are pretty trash. But I'm going out on a limb here and saying we go back to the early Chris Mack days of not being able to win in these early season exempt tournaments, and Xavier picks up a second loss here on that Friday in the second game.
I do not think that X will go undefeated in non-conference, And but likewise, I have a hard time seeing them lose more than one home game. So I agree with you. I think they probably lose a game at Vegas.
All right. They come back home that Tuesday night, November 28th, FS1. They will play Baylor at 6:30. An exciting game, kind of a splash game, a game that'll turn some heads and have people watching. Dan, I think this Baylor team is going to take a fairly significant step backwards. Losing Jonathan Motley was huge. I think Xavier wins this game and kind of makes a statement in this one with a lot of people watching.
I agree. I think that's a win. In fact, you can go ahead and put me down for wins all the way through the rest of the non-conference schedule.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Obviously, that next game, though, this is a pretty exciting stretch when you say you play at Wisconsin. Obviously, there's the Hampton game, and then you go to the Continental Las Vegas Tires Invitational, so you're going to see a couple games in quick succession there. Then Baylor, and then on December 2nd, that Saturday at noon, FS1 is the UC game. And you've got Xavier winning the home game against UC. See, I do as well. Anything else to add about this year's shootout? I mean, obviously, it's going to be a great one. Both teams should be really good.
Yeah, I mean, I think UC's got a chance to have a pretty special year. I know everybody's jocking them, but the one thing that I will say that they've done this year is they've scheduled up in non-conference. They've actually put a schedule together that is worthy of the team that they have. And so I think they're going to face some real tests in non-conference. They play UCLA, they play Mississippi State, they play Florida.
But to that point, this will be the first of that stretch, right? I mean, this is the first tough game they play, whereas Xavier will have already played at Wisconsin. And I mean, I guess UC will have been in the Cayman Islands, so that'll probably, you know, kind of be their away from home test. But
yeah, I mean, I think Xavier will win at home. I think UC is a strong team. I think on a neutral court, UC might be favored by a point or two, but at Cintas, I think Xavier should have enough to win it.
Sorry, we had some technical difficulties, so I'm going back to our typical audio quality, which sounds like it's the bottom of the well.
I tried, folks. I made the attempt to get him back on Skype, and we just had some technical difficulties. It didn't work out.
We'll get it ironed out for the next one, which I know we've been promising for 5 years.
It's the Musketeer Report difference.
Yeah, so see, this is where those Enquirer podcasts are superior to ours, because they actually had a studio. Maybe that's what we need. So the UC game, I think last year, you know, Xavier got pumped so badly in the second half of that game on the boards and physically, and just got outworked and just, I mean, UC just pounded them into submission the second half. I suspect the staff will remind them of that a few times that week, and I cannot imagine that happening again. So I do think Xavier will win that game.
No, I agree. I think it's totally just a pride thing. It has nothing to do with who the better team is. It's more just about being on Xavier's home court, Trey Vaughn, JP senior year, the confidence they've had over UC. I mean, even last year, Trayvon puts 40 on them and somehow loses that game. I just think Xavier's going to be on full tilt for that one. And then other than that, I mean, does the game at Northern Iowa give you any pause at all this year? I mean, it seems like they're going to be taking a step back.
I mean, well, they took a step back last year after Xavier beat them twice in succession. I mean, they had a miserable season after that. Yeah, I mean, obviously going on the road to a place like that, most likely Xavier will be ranked, perhaps relatively highly. That could definitely be a bear trap. Also, that Marshall game on the 19th, just because of the way they play. We saw last year they took UC to the absolute brink at Fifth Third Arena. You know, if they're shooting at a high level, they're a problem. And you never know when they're just going to have one of those games where they go completely off. So I would say Marshall probably is the Colorado, East Tennessee, Marshall, Northern Iowa. I would say Marshall of the home games is the most is the one that kind of gives me a little bit of pause. And then at Northern Iowa, just because, you know, you're playing a highly motivated mid-major team in a tough place to play, in a situation where they're going to want it probably more than you do. It means a lot more to them than it will Xavier at that point. They'll be looking you know, not only forward to the Christmas holiday, but also to the start of Big East play the following Wednesday at Marquette. So, yeah, Northern Iowa could be a little bit of an issue.
Well, because it's a situation. I think ultimately, it's a situation that Northern Iowa never gets, right? I mean, like, to get teams don't agree to come there and play them, not of Xavier's caliber. So this is a rare opportunity for them. It's not something that happens every year.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think ultimately Xavier 11-2, maybe 12-1 in the non-conference slate.
Yeah, that's, I've got them 11-2 in non-conference. I said the same thing on the Skinny podcast earlier today. And then you get into Big East, and we don't have to go game by game, but I'm almost to the point with this conference where I think if you finish above 500, like if you finish 10-8, you've had a really solid year, a really good year. If you do any better than that, it's great, and you're looking at top four seeding.
Right. And I mean, if you look at KenPom's projections, which, you know, at this point aren't hugely predictive, but he's got Villanova 14-4, and then he's got three teams at 11-7, including X, Providence, Seton Hall, the teams you would consider in that second tier. So yeah, I mean, I think that plays out. I mean, you're going to have to go into the season thinking, I need to hold serve at home, and I need to poach, you know, three wins, maybe four if you blow a home game, and get to 11 or 12 wins in conference, and you should be looking really good, potentially even for a protected seed, as you say.
Yeah, so, you know, 11-2 non-conference, 10-8-ish in the conference. You finish with about 10 losses. I mean, I think the expectation for this team, Dan, is that they get a top 5 seed, maybe 6 seed minimally. And you hope that they have the chance to get a 3 or 4 if things go right.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, it could be that it comes together earlier than we would expect, and they have a season like 2 years ago, where they go 14-4, 13-5 in the league, and they're in the top 10 for most of the season. It could also, you know, without Xavier being bad, look record wise a lot like last year. Xavier being, you know, 10-8 maybe in conference rather than 9-9, and not having had a bad year at all. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I think, you know, I hate to say it, but this season, to a large extent, is really about the NCAA tournament for Xavier. I hate to say that because I'm trying to break myself of the habit of always considering what happens over the course of a 4 or 5 month season. Just to figure out what's going to happen in March, because, you know, you would like to think you can enjoy every game for what it is. But yeah, I think for most of your fans, they feel like this is a team that, because of the high-end talent that they have, has a chance to go to the Final Four. And to a large extent, that's when this season will be a success, or, you know, just another solid Xavier season by what happens those 2 weekends.
I think it comes down to the fact that as much as everyone wants to believe that Xavier's taking a step forward as a program, and they have, they absolutely have, and they continue to stay on that upward trajectory, but they're not an elite, you know, blue blood, and they probably never will be. And quite honestly, there's very few teams that are. Like, there's Duke and there's Kentucky, and then there's a couple others you can kind of throw in there that play at a really high level more consistently than the others. But Duke and Kentucky, in terms of recruiting, are the only ones that are basically doing what they want at this point. They each take 4 or 5 5-stars, and then everyone else dukes it out for the rest. These types of situations where you have a guy who's going to be your second leading all-time scorer in school history, and you pair him with another senior who's really, really talented on the wing in J.P. McCarron, and you've got a talent like a Quentin Gooden physically, and Paul Scruggs and Najee Marshall infusing your team, and it really does. It's a rare opportunity for teams like Xavier and UC to be in the positions they're in. And when those opportunities come around, you have to seize them. So I think you're right, Dan.
Right.
Like, I mean, if you're going to talk about Xavier making Elite Eights and Final Fours and doing something bigger, when else are you going to do it if you don't do it in a year like this? You know, and that's not to put too much pressure on this team, but it's just to say that you're right. Like, to a large extent, for most Xavier fans, and rightfully so, it'll come down to what type of run does this team make?
Well, yeah, and you hear about it in baseball sometimes, like the year chooses you. I think 2 years ago, the year chose Xavier, because while that team looked really good out of the traps, I don't think anybody anticipated they'd start like 15-0 or whatever it was and be top five in the country and beat Villanova. And then they lost in extraordinary circumstances in the second round of the tournament. This year, it's like the year is lining up. I mean, the things that they need to be in place are lined up. It's similar to the Jordan Crawford year. Because it's not necessarily about, oh, we're nine guys strong. This is about not only are you strong on the, not only have you strength and depth, but you have an elite player, which has not always been the case, even for good Xavier teams. I mean, Tu Holloway is a great player, but he wasn't like that elite talent that could drag you through to the Final Four. Trayvon Blewett, I think, is. So, you know, we'll see if it happens this year.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, all that being said, you still go back to this is going to be a long season and it should be a lot of fun for Xavier fans because they're going to have an entertaining product each and every night to watch on the court, and really good basketball around the rest of this area too. So it should be an awesome college basketball season. I can't wait to tip it off tomorrow night. Dan, is there anything else, any more bold predictions about this team? Anything you need to get off your chest?
I think that they are going to play with two bigs more than anyone would expect right now. Wow. I think you're going to see Kaiser and Karam paired with a big, more minutes than maybe you and I would anticipate going into the season. Just a sense I get. I think they might want to use that size. And if Kaiser can... And if Kaiser can demonstrate that he's more of a more diverse offensive weapon, I think he's going to earn more playing time. And I don't know that Chris is going to want to use him at the five. So if Kaiser is going to be on the court, most of the time he's going to be on there paired with a Sean O'Mara or with a Tyreek Jones. And I think Canner the same way, because I don't know that they'll trust Canner to play the five defensively.
Wow. Well, that was a stronger take than I expected, although it got a little softer when I realized you were counting Kaiser Gates as a big. Not that that's wrong of you.
He's a four. In my view, he's a four. I view, especially with the weight that he's put on, to me, he's more of a four than a wing.
No, yeah, no, I agree with that, and that's completely understandable. But I guess, like, he's going to start. So, yeah, like, I expect that unit to play a decent amount of minutes. I am very intrigued to see how much Chris Mack plays Karam at the four with another big in the game. I don't know what to expect there. So I am interested to see how much that happens. I think the other unit will play a lot. That is, until Kaiser doesn't play tough enough or isn't aggressive enough to solidify his role and Najee Marshall passes him up. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but Kaiser better be ready to go from jump the entire season, because Najee Marshall doesn't lack for confidence.
Right. No doubt about that.
All right. Well, I think that does it for this preseason edition.
We were going to talk about signing day, recruiting class.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. All right. Well, I think the only other thing we had to wrap up here was just signing day. Talk a little bit about recruiting, where things stand. Xavier signed two players on National Signing Day, which was Wednesday. Keontae Kennedy, three-star shooter out of the Austin, Texas area, goes to Westlake High School, has athleticism. I think he has some upside there because of his length and athleticism, and he can do more than just shoot, but they are bringing him in primarily because he shoots the ball at a high level. That's his high major skill. The rest of his game and his body need to come around a little bit, but there's certainly some upside there. And then Jake Walter, local big man from Covington Catholic, he's 7 foot. He's trimmed himself down to about 255, 260 pounds, I'd say now. To be quite honest, like, he has to make a significant jump before he's ready to contribute at the high major level. But at the same time, like, when you're going to gamble on that type of kid, it, like, at least make him be 7 foot, right? and have their dad be a former NFL player who was kind of a late bloomer himself. So there's some good pedigree there. There's some reason to be excited about his upside. But the thing I would say is this class didn't end on signing day. And obviously we've posted more about it on the message board and what's happening this weekend with official visits and everything. So there's still more to come in this 2018 class. They're certainly not done. I think they might add one more before the signing period's even up. And then going forward, I still think there's possibility that they look to add a transfer or a JUCO or anything down the line in the spring, maybe a guy that decommits, maybe something happens with these FBI investigations and someone new comes back on the board that was originally committed to another school. A lot of things that can still play out, and Xavier will be very active. And if they have a great season, theoretically, they'll be a very attractive landing spot, too, for potential prospects.
Yeah, it does seem like, I mean, I guess the first thing that I would say is that when you look at their roster and what they're going to have the following season, you know, their top five or six are going to be really good. The problem is there's nobody behind them. So I guess if the guys that come in this year, even if all they get is Walter Kennedy and let's say Dontarius James, if they do end up getting him, you know, it's not ideal. I mean, you and Snow have not sugarcoated this at any point. We tried to kind of accentuate the positive throughout the summer because Xavier was still in on a bunch of guys, and they looked to be in, you know, decent shape with Sadiq Bey for a while, and that went away. And Taylen Horton Tucker, they looked like they were in great shape, and then that went a different way. And you know, it's obviously been very frustrating for a fan perspective. And I get, you know, the argument that, yeah, this recruiting class is not great. I mean, there is, look, I don't want to piss in anybody's Wheaties, but there's a non-zero chance that even if those are the three guys they bring in, that none of those three guys are ever really make it at Xavier. But I think it's more likely that Kennedy and James could be rotation guys at worst. And if you can follow that up with a really good 2019 incoming class where you replenish some of the star quality guys you need, no big deal, right? It's just, it obviously, I mean, I share the disappointment of a lot of fans, and assuredly the guys on the coaching staff, they weren't able to land some of those guys that would have been immediate impact players. Certainly in the graduate market, they are going to have to get a big. There's just no two ways about it. I don't think that they can go into that year with their only big options being Tyreek Kaiser playing up to a five, which we don't know really if he can do, and Jake Walter, who, you know, I think the smart money is it would be a redshirt, or they would prefer to redshirt him his first year at Xavier. So I think that's going to be the key, is finding that grad transfer big on the market, maybe even a JUCO that you can bring in and can immediately play pretty big time minutes. You know, Xavier's been able to do that in the past. They, you know, Matt Stainbrook was a transfer, obviously a guy that had sit out, but was a big time player from the second he stepped on campus. Rasheed Gaston, for many of his struggles, filled a role at the beginning of last year, and had some important games for the Musketeers throughout the season. And they don't really need a starting center out of that group. They just need somebody that can play 15, 20 minutes a game. And not kill them. So I think that's going to be, that to me is the number one priority. But as you say, they have a million scholarships available, and they're going to be, I would think, super aggressive about any possibility that's out there.
Well, what an uplifting end to a exciting start to the college basketball season. No, I think the last scenario you laid out is probably the most likely one. I think they do add the Rasheed Gaston type big man. It is what you should expect as a Xavier fan, is they add a guy that can be serviceable for a year or two as they kind of bridge this gap into their next recruiting class or two, or till Jake Walter can be a bona fide contributor or whatever. But yeah, I think
that's... And really, if you look at the history of Xavier recruiting, they tend to have a really good class like every 3 years or something like that. It's not like this is the first time that they've ever had followed up a big... highly heralded class with a class that flies under the radar, where they, I mean, Kaiser Gates was the only guy they brought in the year after Trayvon, JP, et cetera. So, I mean, we've seen this kind of cycle play itself out before. I obviously this year with just all the guys that they finished second for, it was a little bit more traumatic, I guess.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like what happened this summer and fall in terms of just missing on guy after guy that they were seemed to really be in there with. But I almost feel a little responsible with me and Brian Snow that the way this narrative has played out, because it's just gone completely off the deep end. Like this has been broken down ad nauseum. It's the only thing that's been talked about on the message board seemingly for the last few months. And it's just the same things being rehashed over and over. And I do think that the expectations have just gotten really skewed because Xavier did land, you know, that really good Trayvon, JP and Edmund class. And then you get a guy like Quentin Gooden, was a big time talent. You follow it up, you know, with Najee and Paul Scruggs to where you're starting to stack these classes and they're starting to overlap. You had momentum. You've been doing well in the Big East. It seemed like everything was poised to take a step forward. This was a missed opportunity to do that. Like if they would have landed another two top 50 guys or a top 50 guy and a really impressive top 100 guy, that would have made things feel like, oh, wow, you know, Xavier is really doing this consistently now. They're going to keep right after this big time team that they're supposed to have this year. They're going to keep this rolling because they're stacking stars right behind, you know, the next stars in Paul Scruggs and Najee Marshall and potentially Tyreek Jones. So it was a missed opportunity, but that's what it was. Like Xavier has won with unranked three stars their entire existence. Mick Cronin continues to do that. Like we've been talking all year on the Skinny podcast, like Xavier's recruiting is death and UC is dominating. And it's like, I mean, the kid they landed this year, Logan Johnson, is outside the top 100. He's not ranked. He's a composite three star. And I guess if you ask UC fans to screenshot you on Twitter, they will, that in the Jerry Meyer rankings, he was ranked as a four star outside the top 100. But Trevor Moore was ranked like 100 spots behind Keontae Kennedy. And everyone's excited about the contribution he's about to make at UC. You know, like Mick Cronin's done a good job of continuing to compete at a high level with those types of kids. So it's not like, you know, it's not like Xavier just threw this class away and these guys can't play at all. I mean, Keontae Kennedy could be very similar to like a Kaiser Gates level recruit. You know, it's not like the kid can't play at all. And I think people have gone a little off the deep end with how big of a hit for Xavier that this is. It's a missed opportunity. I don't expect it to be some type of derailing or something that really kills their momentum as a program.
Yeah, I mean, if in 12 months they're looking at a recruiting class where they have, you know, nothing but projects or they haven't really been able to fill any of those voids, then yes, there's probably going to be a reckoning as a result of that in a couple of years. I mean, we saw it in the past. I mean, the Justin Martin class where, you know, three of the four guys didn't make it at Xavier. I mean, that obviously I think that did have an effect, and that was part of why Xavier had kind of a paucity of talent for a couple of years there.
Well, but Dan, there are also compounding circumstances there where, you know, you land a guy like Des Wells who could have cleaned that up and made up for that, and then you lose him after his freshman. You know what I mean? Like, so like even still, had they not had some other circumstances arise, they could have come out of that and still been okay. Like that's how college basketball works. It is cyclical. You do have to land like that one guy to make the difference and keep things rolling. But that's how it works for most teams in the country. You know, like this isn't really a new thing, and it's not the end of the world for Xavier. It's certainly not ideal. It wasn't a good class, and it was certainly disheartening the way it played out. And I completely understand the frustration. But I do feel like maybe me and Brian were too negative early on because I'm shocked at how much this has been discussed on the message board.
All right, fair enough. So we should probably say, what are our predictions for these first two games, since I don't imagine we'll be recording again until the lead up to the Wisconsin game?
Oh, Xavier 96, Morehead State 65.
And okay, I'll take the, I'll say like 88 to 65.
Yeah, and then Ryder, I really know nothing about their roster at this point other than they're not expected to be very good. So I'm not sure exactly like what type of style that game is going to be. But I'll say for that one, 87 to 66.
I think that's a beating, like maybe like 90 to 58 or something like that.
All
right. But either way, I think we're looking at a couple blowouts in the early going, and then we'll see against Wisconsin, because obviously that's a really talented team with one of the top players in the country and Ethan Happ.
Yep. All right. Well, I think that does it for this edition of the Dana and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.